and welcome to your favorite bookish podcast, Fully Booked and Caffeinated. I'm Heather.
I'm Kelsey.
And we're doing something new. This is something that we had talked about when we first made the pod. This was idea that we had early on. And then, you know, I got pregnant. And then Kelsey went back to school. So now we're finally able to do the idea, which is, we're going to do a monthly film review that the film itself is based off of a book.
Book to movie adaptation.
Uh-huh.
And it only took us to episode 96
to do literally, it. I think I brought up this idea to you like 2 months into the podcast. I was
literally,
like, you know what we should do?
No, even before we started the podcast, you're like, we should do a movie rewatch podcast.
And they're like, okay, we'll
find a way.
And I was
like, you have too many ideas, Heather. Hold on.
I always have too many ideas and not enough time to make any of them work.
Yes.
I have a lot of great ideas. Just no time and no motivation.
If we had more time, we'd be unstoppable. This is
truly
why women
truly
can rule the world, but have not been trusted to yet. Because we truly take on too many things.
Exactly.
You know?
So we're going to do them once a month. We're going to rotate like we do with our books. So this was, the first one is my choice.
Which, by the way, you also chose 2 years ago.
I did. I was like, I know what I'm starting with.
100%.
Because truly, the only idea I had was I want to do like a 90s movies rewatch podcast. Mm-hmm. It's actually what I wanted to do. Because the 90s were just on another level when it came to film.
Ugh.
Like, they were very problematic, but so good.
It was such a wild time.
The heartthrobs and the leading ladies, they were truly amazing.
The fashion, the music.
The fashion. Just everything. So I was able to intertwine it, and I'm doing it now.
And I will say, I'm impressed, because this is based on a book.
It is.
But loosely.
Loosely. Loosely, but it's based on a book, so
sure is.
We're going with it, and it could be, you know, and we don't necessarily have to have read the book. Even though I did read this book in high school, I don't remember a damn thing about it, but I did read it in high school.
I could tell you the movie version, that's for sure.
I know exactly. Don't worry.
We're going to.
I screenshotted the play synopsis on
Incredible.
Wikipedia.
Okay,
because the names are actually taken from, they like used similar names that were actually like in the book.
Love that.
So without further ado, we are reviewing 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yay!
The 1999 film classic. It's based off of William Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew.
Look at us.
I know.
Being all literary and whatnot.
I know. So a little backstory. I had told you, I was in my 10th grade English class, reread Taming of the Shrew, and our teacher was like, yeah, we're going to watch 10 Things I Hate About You, because it's based off of this play. And I'm like, that's amazing. So I got to watch 10 Things I Hate About You in high school. It was really great.
Also, if we were teachers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was good times. So it was directed by Gil Junger. Younger, J-U-N-G-E-R. Don't know how to pronounce that. He has not really directed anything else of this caliber. However, he did direct 4 episodes of the amazing Mary-Kate and Ashley show, Two of a Kind. So, I gotta hand it to him.
Okay.
I gotta hand it to him. But yeah, other than that, there wasn't really many, he doesn't really have any other big films that he directed.
Once you hit a big one, just...
I know. Exactly.
Recede into the shadows.
I know. It was released May 31st, 1999. Right? So, like I said, this was based off of Taming of the Shrew. And the main plot depicts the courtship of... don't know how to pronounce this, but it's Petruchio. P-E-T-R-U-C-H-I-O. And Katerina, the headstrong... Shrew, which is where, and they do, like, bring up the word true, like, once or twice in the movie, which I, like, didn't flag any other time I watched this movie, but now that, like, I'm watching it with the intention of realizing it's based off of something, I was like, oh, they, like, Bianca calls Kat a shrew, like, multiple times. Initially, Katerina is an unwilling participant in the relationship. However, Petruchio, probably not saying that right, tames her with various psychological and physical torments, such as keeping her from eating and drinking until she becomes a desirable, compliant, and obedient bride. The subplot features a competition between the suitors of Catherine's younger sister, Bianca, who is seen as the ideal woman. The question of whether the play is misogynistic has become the subject of considerable controversy.
That's weird, because it doesn't sound like a question. Sounds pretty concrete to me.
We know that Shakespeare, like, hates women, clearly. In every single play, I feel like he does not like women.
But wow, hearing it summed up like that is triggering.
And so obviously, like, I didn't remember that the names of the people in this play. And I was like, oh wow. So they actually took, like, Bianca, they took Katerina. It's spelled differently in the in the book. And then I guess, like, Petruchio, they kind of got Patrick. But then, and I just flagged this last night too, or the night before, and I, like, looked at Eric and I was like, oh my god, I think his last name is a play on, like, Romeo and Juliet, because his last name is Verona.
Oh. Okay.
So, so they're like, Verona, I think that they took that last name.
They're like, let's made Easter that. Egg.
Exactly.
Another Shakespeare.
I don't know if that's true, but it seems like I'm on the right track.
This is like when we made that vampire connection with all the names, and we're like, it might not be true, but we're going with it.
Yeah. So, listen, it's not really based on a book, but it kind of is. I just wanted a reason to talk about 10 Things I Hate About You. And I have it.
Could never argue with that. I love it.
I love that as soon as the movie starts, the first song is just One Week by Bare Naked Ladies, and I'm just instantly nostalgic, pulled back to the 90s.
100%.
Like, the music in this film was so good. I forgot how good the soundtrack Flawless. Was. And you said that there was 46 songs. I don't know if that's true, but there was a lot of music, though. And they did have it, because even they would even only play, like, a small clip, and then the next scene would be another song. So it is quite possible that that is true.
Yeah, like 46 clips at least. And a lot of, like, alt rock and just, I mean, a lot of these are very 90s coded, but some of them aren't. You know what I mean? Like, some of them are definitely unique.
Yeah. Miss Perky, played by Alice and Janney, the guidance counselor, would 100% be a book talk girly.
Like, yes.
1,010%.
Yes.
She is the future us, realistically. Very inappropriate, though. There were a few scenes that I was like, ooh.
A principal in the 90s.
didn't know that. Like, when she says that Patrick Verona, when he goes in there, and he's like, yeah, you flashed the lunch lady. And he was like, no, it was a bratwurst. And he was like, oh, you think? That's helping. And he's like, oh, it's very, like, ostentatious of you to think that.
Which,
like,
also, another extremely inappropriate scene involving a teacher. Where Kat literally shows her boobs.
Oh, God, don't worry. Oh, we'll get to that. Because literally, I know. I was like, there was a lot of inappropriateness, which, obviously, it was the 90s. People were YOLOing it with movies back in the 90s.
Yes, but I'm like, actual breasts, wow. Interesting.
I know. And then, like, seeing, like, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I'm like, he was such a baby. Like, I forgot what a baby he was in this movie.
Oh, my God. So, immediately, when I started watching it, I'm like, I must know how old they were when this was filmed, because Heath Ledger looks so much older than everyone else. But he's only 20, and everyone else is 17. So, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Julia Stiles,
Larissa
Olenek? Could go either way. She's all of them are 17.
I didn't know that.
It's not that much of a difference. But, I mean, Joseph Gordon-Levitt looks like a baby.
I know.
And Heath Ledger looks like a hot 30-year-old man.
Listen, that is just one man that was taken from us way too soon.
Oh, yes. And also, I forgot just how beautiful he is with the dark hair. Because he really did not have dark hair for many other roles that I can think of. Like, he's always blonde. And he looks hot as a blonde. I'm not saying he doesn't. But the brown hair.
Like, I forgot I was how, there much, for it. How much I loved him.
Until, and his like, smile? When I watched Are you this. Kidding me?
I know. Ugh. He's, like, literal perfection. And then we have Katarina, who is our, I would like to say, probably one of the first feminists that's really portrayed in, like, our generation in that, like, time frame. Because I feel like if you think about the rom-coms of the 90s, you know, She's All That and Drive Me Crazy. Like, they're not, there wasn't any strong female characters.
And if they like were, Kat. They were never the main character.
Exactly. And so she's one of us, 100%.
Which I have a lot of thoughts about how she's portrayed in this, but we'll get to it.
So I actually wrote down, you should have seen me, I was like, backtrack, because I wrote my notes.
I love that.
I wrote my notes as I was watching. And I actually had to, like, rewind to, like, write down the quotes, or I had to, like, quickly Google like, the search, because she had this, there were, like, two opening lines that she had when she's in the classroom. And the one is, I guess in this society, being male and an asshole makes you worthy of our time.
Wow, that one aged well.
Uh-huh.
Because it's still fucking true.
Yep. And the oppressive patriarchal values that dictate our education.
Also still true. Yay!
Yeah, I'm sure that when they made this movie, they thought that things were going to be different. Yeah, they're not.
And just the amount of things that truly went completely over my head.
I know. Like, watching it now, being in, like, my mid-30s and going through the past 10 years, I'm like, wow, like, this really is hitting very, very close to home right now.
I'm, like, yelling at my TV, like, yes, Kat, yes, queen, yes.
Exactly. Which is, again, like, why I hated that she flashed her teacher, but I'll get to it. So the whole premise of the movie is Cameron, played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Joey Donner, who is the atypical male douchebag of this film. They both want to basically fuck Bianca, but Bianca cannot date until Kat does. Which, you know, smart on the dad, who, by the way, is my favorite dad of all time.
Absolutely love him.
And so the whole premise of the movie is basically Cameron wants to date Bianca. And first off, he sees her in the hallway one time, and he's instantly in love. And
when he goes, I don't remember exactly what he said, but he's like, I pine, I cherish. Like,
literally.
Babe, we know it's based on Shakespeare. We get it.
I know. So, see, there's little, like, Easter eggs thrown in. And so Michael, who is the nerd guy that has to give Cameron the tour of the school, and obviously they become, like, besties, he's like, well, she needs a French tutor. And Cameron's like, cool, I'll do that. And he's like, do you know French? He's like, nope, but I'll learn it.
Honestly, this is just proof of if he wanted to, he would.
Exactly, 100%.
If your man is not learning French for you,
yeah.
So cut him
he
loose.
Pretends he knows French so he can tutor Bianca. He immediately asks her out within 5 minutes of this meeting.
More like 5 seconds. It's incredible.
Yeah. And Bianca's like, well, I'm sorry, my father has put a chastity belt on me, so you need to get my shrew of a sister to date someone, and then I can date you. But realistically, she just wants to date Joey Donner. So Cameron's like, challenge accepted. He will find someone to date Kat. And so Michael and Cameron do these interviews around school with the potheads and the delinquents, and no one will touch Kat with a 10-inch pole or 10-foot pole. They're like, we're good.
The one guy who just screams, screams bloody murder.
So enter Patrick Verona. He is our knight in shining armor.
Ooh, which and is resident bad boy.
Easter egg, he played a knight in A Knight's Tale.
He sure did.
He sure did. So Cameron and Michael realize that they're going to need a backer because they can't just ask Patrick to just date Kat without any incentive, but they don't have money. They're high school children. So they decide to ask Joey to pay Patrick to date Kat with the intention of making Joey think that he is going to date Bianca. It's a whole mess, to be honest. It's a very, very confusing love square.
Mm-hmm.
Triangle, hexagon. It's just very... It's a lot of shapes.
It smoothly takes shape.
Oh, it does.
In 100%. That rhombus or whatever.
And this was one of my favorite scenes of all time. The iconic penis draw on the face. He's just trying to have a serious conversation with Joey, and Joey's just like, just drawing. Mm-hmm. And at one point, Michael's like, there's a dick on my face.
In Sharpie, of course.
In Sharpie. So the first offer is $50 to take out Kat. And Patrick, he's no, listen, he wasn't born yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, well, it's going to cost, you know, the movies are going to be $50 plus popcorn, that's $75, gas for my vehicle. You know, it's going to be like $100.
Raise the nets.
Mm-hmm. So he's playing, you know, the long game here. He understands completely. So Joey's like, all right, fine.
Because Joey originally offers $20, which, like, I know. The 90s, but babe.
Mm-hmm.
That's not enough to do anything.
It's not. So I think they came back with, like, 50 was, like, the mm-hmm. final offer. And he's like, all right. And Patrick, like, immediately just, like, confronts Kat, like, on the school field and, like, tries to, like, pick her up there. And she's just like, no, thank you. Just immediately, like, brushes him off. It was like, mm-hmm. I'm good.
And he's like, wait, what?
I know. So he's like, oh, shit. Like, I got my work cut out for me. And
also, like, to have the confidence of a mediocre white man.
Oh, I know.
To think that you're going to approach this person who you've mm-hmm. never spoken to and just be like, you want to go out? And she's mm-hmm. going to be like, oh my God, yes.
Literally. Literally. And then there's the part at the guitar store. This is like the second part that he tries to corner her, to talk to her. And so he does that. And then Joey comes up behind her and just like parks his like sports car directly. Like, there's parking spaces for a reason. Mm-hmm. But this dude is like, I don't know. I don't know what his influence is in this town. He's like a model boy, and I just don't... His family must be affluent, because, mm-hmm. you know, we don't really get a backstory on where his True. Wealth comes from. So
True.
I'm just, like, spitballing here. But he just parks his car directly behind Kat's, and Kat is just like, what is it, asshole day?
Iconic.
She has the best lines in this movie.
It's so hard to choose a favorite, but this part is up there.
Literally. And so Kat's like, well, all right. I'm just going to back my car into your car and just demolish it because it's asshole day.
Mm-hmm.
And I can do what I want because it's asshole day. And you then, can be one, I can be one.
Whoops.
Uh-huh. And then there's just, like, the immediate hard eyes on Patrick.
Oh, my God.
Watching Kat do this. Mm-hmm. He's immediately in love.
He's like, she does not give a fuck.
No, and I just want to talk about the toothpick look. When he just has the toothpick in his mouth. And he does that little, like, lopsided grin. Mm-hmm. I'm like, Kat, just drop your panties. Because, like, it's going to be worth it.
It is the grin that is described in romance novels.
100%.
Like the lopsided grin.
Like Heath Ledger.
The curly hair.
Is the man that romance authors are writing about.
Mm-hmm. Like the 100%. One that everyone's like scared of, and then they uh-huh. actually have this like teddy bear persona underneath it all.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, man, after this scene when Kat's dad is like, my insurance doesn't cover PMS.
And he's like, oh, tell him I had a seizure or whatever.
Yes. And, like, I just love it because this poor dad who is a girl dad, like, a dad to daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, here she goes again.
Yeah.
Here, literally. Another thing I have to deal with. And they but obviously he, like, have a lot of money.
I know. But he's like, he could tell how much he, like, freaking loves Kat.
Oh my God.
Like, he's so proud of, like, the woman that she has become.
And how independent she is, 100%. Yeah.
And, like, we also don't get much of a backstory about their familiar relationship, but it sounds like the mom just, like, dipped.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. which, again, we love, like, a father that sticks around.
Mm-hmm.
So we love a non-problematic father. And at this point, Patrick's like, okay, $100 a date in advance. Because I see now what I am working with. I was not aware when we first made this deal, but now I know.
He's like, it's going to be to cover my medical bills, to cover my possible car, insurance raising. Yeah.
Yep. So Michael and Cameron approach Patrick and they're like, we're going to help you get Kat. And immediately, like, Pat's like, all right, Joey wants to get in Bianca's pants. Cameron wants to get in Bianca's pants. And he says this iconic line, what is it with this chick? She have beer-flavored nipples.
That's so good.
I'm like, okay. Yeah. All right, that tracks. Mm-hmm. So then you have Cameron and Bianca just searching Kat's room. They just immediately, invasion of privacy. Mm-hmm. And then Cameron's like, well, can I see your room? And Bianca's like, no, that's a very personal thing for a woman. And I'm like, you're literally in your fucking sister's room.
Going through her underwear drawer.
And then I have to tell you, though, that this moment when she goes into Kat's underwear drawer and she pulls out the black panties and she's like, don't you know what this means? And Cameron's like, no, because he's a virgin, obviously. Mm-hmm. And she's like, it means she wants to have sex someday. It's like, you don't buy black lingerie if you don't want anyone to see it. And my young teen brain was forevermore changed by this situation. Because I'm like, oh, I can only own black panties if I'm going to be sexual.
If I'm ready to give it up.
And I was, so this moment, just, I just need the world to know that the influential moment that this scene had on me as a youth. Mm-hmm. It made an impact. I'll tell you.
And
that
now
much.
I'm like, all I own are black underwear because all I own are black everything.
I'm like black underwear is where
now
it's at.
Now it's like, if this is lacy and has like red on it, you're trying
exactly.
to bang.
Exactly. Bianca fills Cameron in on what Kat likes and dislikes. So then they go and they approach Patrick and he's like, all right, number one, Kat hates smokers. So you gotta quit smoking. Number two, she likes pretty guys. Heath Ledger goes, you telling me I'm not a pretty guy?
He's like, oh my god. I wasn't sure.
They just backtrack immediately. And she likes Thai food, feminist prose, and angry girl music of the indie girl rock persuasion. And she's gonna be at Club Skunk. That's a fun name for a
Which,
bar.
Not for nothing. Jumping ahead just a bit, when he gets to Club Skunk and he knows the bartender.
I know.
But I'm like, babe.
And even, like, before that, he's like, I can't go back there.
Yeah, like, what?
And I'm like,
he's like, so I can't be seen there. It's like,
what do you mean you can't be seen there? Like, why not?
Who's gonna see you?
Exactly. So he shows up at the show and he, like, watches her from, like, afar for a little bit and, like, immediately he just has, like, the smitten look on his face. And I'm like, listen, this boy is already hook, line, and sinker. He definitely, like, wants to, like, get to know Kat, not even for money purposes. And he goes to the bar. Kat ends up coming up to the bar and she, like, sees him, immediate eye roll. And she's like, you know, and she tries to, like, strike up a conversation with him. And he's like, can you please stop talking? I'm trying to listen to this band that I love. And she's like, why aren't, you know, I thought that you were smoking, you know, why aren't you smoking? He's like, oh, I quit. He's just, like, doing all this stuff. And then one of the other iconic lines is, he's in the middle of telling her, I was watching you out there before, and I've never seen you so sexy. And then as soon as he says the last half of that sentence, the band just stops playing. And it's just quiet. And he's, like, yelling it, obviously, mm-hmm. because he's trying to talk to her during when the band is playing.
And it's, like, 95% women.
Women.
And they all are just, like...
Yeah.
And every time... Julia Stiles, her acting is so good in this mm-hmm. because she's so stoic and serious. Mm-hmm. But then every time, like, that he catches her off guard or she has to, like, stifle a laugh.
I know.
She really plays it off. Like, she catches does. Herself and then she's, like back to being stoic Cat.
I know. And so she's obviously falling for his charm, too, even though she doesn't want to. And he invites her to go to Bogey's party. And she's just kind of, like, maybe. Like, she doesn't really give, like, a yes or no. And he's like, all right, well, I'll be at your house at 9:30 to pick you up. Bianca tries to sneak out with her BFF, whose name I didn't write down, but it's played
Chastity.
By Chastity. Oh, look, Chastity. See, look, I can't. There we go. Who was played, though, by the wonderful Gabrielle Union, who needed more roles in the 90s. Mm-hmm. But she played some good ones.
And also her tank top dress with the stripe down the side was so iconic. And the little backpack,
screamed 90s.
I loved it.
The epitome of 90s fashion, like 1,010%. She tries to convince Kat to go to Bogey's party, and Kat gives in, which obviously is kind of, like, surprising, but she kind of, like, obviously, like, wants Bianca to have, like, a little bit of fun. But then the dad makes her wear the belly. Which is basically, like, the fake pregnant belly, but it's, like, heavy. It's like
a weighted vest
but with like a belly
and boobs.
I know. And he's like, you know, I want you to know the consequences of your actions if you go out and have sex tonight.
The way that I was so flabbergasted by this when I was a young girl.
I know.
I was like, oh my God.
And then when the cat goes to open the door to leave, Patrick is outside. He's like, yeah, 9:30, right? And then he's like, who knocked up your sister?
I just love how comfortable he is just so immediately. Because he's like, I obviously can't impress this girl, so no. I'm not even going to try.
No, he doesn't. Yeah.
It's like, let me go with a different angle.
Yeah. So Bogey Lowenstein was not having a party. He was throwing like a mixer with really smart, rich people.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing crazy.
With like his dad's cigars.
Literally. And so the doorbell rings and he's like, must be Nigel with the brie.
If I say this line to someone and they don't know it, it's a problem.
Like, every time my doorbell rings now, I'm like, must be Nigel with the brie.
And he's like, oh.
It was not Nigel with the brie.
But also, the commitment of all of these high schoolers showing up at the exact same time, and they brought their own speakers, their own, like, DJ table, their own kegs. I'm like, wow, this is the kind of party I'm throwing. Like, everyone's bringing their own shit.
Like, literally. Don't destroy my house, though, please and thank you.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't have that type of fancy shit in my house, so...
Yeah. So they're at the party, and Kat, like, realizes that Bianca wants to try to get with Joey. And she's trying to stop him from doing that. And she doesn't really give her a specific reason why. And then all of a sudden, Kat's like, I'm gonna get drunk. So you obviously have, like, this, like, little foreshadowing of, okay, obviously, clearly something happened with Kat and Joey in the past that just hasn't been disclosed yet. She dances on the table to the iconic Hypnotized by the notorious B.I.G., bangs her head on the chandelier, and is gracefully caught by Patrick. So Patrick can obviously tell that Kat has an issue with Joey, and he kind of, like, he doesn't really press the issue, but he's like, what's, like, your issue, you know, with him?
It's like, he's a piece of shit, but why do you hate him instead of just, like, ignoring him?
Exactly. And then before you have that cute moment, we're on the swings, and then she pukes all over his feet. He, like, gets intercepted by Cameron, who is now just, like, the all-time sad boy because Bianca dissed him at the party to go and hang out with Joey. And then at this party, though, Bianca is when she realizes what a douchebag Joey is and how, like, self-centered he is, and he does not give a shit about anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So she obviously regrets it in that moment of choosing Joey over Cameron, because you definitely have that moment when they meet and when they all see each other in, like, the living room or by the staircase, and Bianca kind of has to choose between Cameron or Joey, and so she goes with Joey.
Cameron's puppy dog sad eyes.
Sad boy.
I was like, is this man cast as a golden retriever?
Literally.
His eyes.
He was so upset. His heart was shattered.
Just like, such a frowny face. I was like,
I know. Oh. But don't worry, because Patrick comes in with his motivational speech. And he is like, don't let anyone ever make you feel like you don't deserve what you want. Where the fuck did this man come from?
Where and it just come from? I love that he has this misunderstood persona. Everyone mm-hmm. makes up all these stories about him. Yeah. And then he's just, like, a good guy. And he's like, well, do you want her? Then, like, go and get her. Like, he just simplifies everything in a way that teenagers simply cannot.
I know. So I just love him. Patrick drives Kat home. She goes to kiss him, and he pies her. And it's just like... And obviously, us as the viewer have a lot of respect for him for, like, not doing that for multiple reasons. Number one, she's drunk. Number two, he's seeing her with kind of ulterior motives right now. And so, you know, he could also, take advantage. Also, she just barfed,
for the record.
Also, that as well.
For so the record. Her breath
probably stinks.
But he maybe should have just done, like, a little...
Yeah.
So and Kat then, like, we could continue this another time.
Kat is obviously pissed because she, as someone who basically has sworn off men, is, finally let somebody in.
She's like, I gave you the time of day.
And she, like, lets herself be just a little bit vulnerable. And it's like a slap in the face. So she's like... All right, well, fuck and you
it's
then.
Kind of like proving her right. Like, this is why I don't open up to people.
Yeah.
Because look what fucking happened.
Then we have Cameron driving Bianca home. And Cameron becomes a man in this moment, all of a sudden. And he confronts her about lying to him. And he just flat out says, have you always been this selfish? Just as, like, girl. And she's like... Excuse me? And then he's like, just because you're beautiful doesn't mean you can treat people like they don't matter.
Oh.
Yes, so not Cameron. Only does Patrick have great quotes, but Cameron has great quotes. And then Bianca but also kisses Cameron.
You're beautiful, so don't act like... Yeah, so Bianca that was like, so perfect.
All right. Like, you got me. Well, because you gotta figure, first she has Joey, who, like... could really care less. He just wants to get in her pants. Like, he just wants to be the one.
He wants to conquer. To,
literally.
Yes.
And then you have Cameron, who fell in love at first sight and is putting her in her place. And is saying, like, listen, I understand that you want to be free and everything, but, you know, you can't just treat me like shit. Like, I did this for you. I was the one that got this for you.
You can't blame Bianca because obviously Joey is like this prize that everyone thinks because he's so beautiful and he's so popular and everyone wants to be with him. And it's kind of like she wanted what she couldn't have. And then when she finally got him, she was like, oh, this man sucks. But she's like, why would I go with Cameron when he's like pining over me? There's no chase. There's no games. And I know that at the end of the day, he's still going to be over there waiting for me.
Yeah.
So when he says, I'm not going to be sitting here waiting for you while you treat me like dirt, she's like, oh, damn. Okay. Which we love a man who can call a woman on her shit in a respectful way.
Yeah. In a way that shows, like, you did hurt me. Like, you actually were wrong in the way that you treated me.
Because it's him being vulnerable. And then showing that she can also be vulnerable, which she knows she cannot be with Joey.
No.
Because that man does not have...
He wouldn't even read the room.
He has dust bunnies going around in his head.
Literally. Like, you could just see the disinterest in his face. Or, like, in her face when they're having a conversation. He just doesn't even notice.
And he's just so... God, the acting in this movie is just... Because he's, like, so earnest and so... He just plays this flighty, beautiful man so well. Like, when he's showing her the pictures, and she's like, that one's more pensive. And he's like, damn, I was going for thoughtful. And he's just so serious. And, like, he is obviously the type of person who would never admit that he doesn't know what pensive means.
No.
So he's like, no, I just, oh, man, I was going for this.
He also definitely voted for Trump.
Oh, yes.
So then, like we said,
probably Kat, so did Cameron, but
Kat is... not happy with Patrick, and he tries multiple times to, like, you know, olive branch, and she just shoots down every single one. So then we have the best scene of the entire movie. I literally turned to Eric and I was like, why don't you ever do this? And he was like, okay, noted. So now I'm scared that there's gonna be a big musical number in my future.
The bar is too high. This is why, like, remember when flash mobs were a thing?
Yeah.
And people were, like, proposing through flash mobs? Yeah. It's, like, it's the thing you want until it happens.
Exactly. I'm like, I want this, but I don't, because also mm-hmm. I don't like attention on me. So we have Patrick singing, "Can't Take My Eyes Off of You," on the school field. This big romantic gesture that he's also doing out of, like, his own heart. Like, he's not even trying to, like, date her anymore. Like, mm-hmm. he'll take the money, but, like, he's not really doing it with Joey's agenda anymore. Like, you can tell this is all
him. And then
all
he
him.
Uses money to pay the head of the band
exactly.
in order to do
exactly.
this.
Exactly. Like, so he gets like, the, you know,
he's spending.
Like, he got the entire band to, like, back him. The entire school band is backing him. Mm-hmm. And he's just dancing
and
on,
that
like,
was, like, the
bleachers.
Cherry on top.
I know. And then you just have, like, these pudgy cops, school cops, chasing after him. And he just, like, kicks one down.
When just, he like, spanks the away. One on the butt. Oh my gosh.
And yeah, so he gets detention mm-hmm. because I guess doing big romantic gestures at school is a big no-no. Which I don't know why what the big deal was. Like, he was just singing on a field. I don't know why that
yeah,
was such a
like,
bad
deal. Is he not allowed to touch the microphones?
Big deal.
They're like,
I don't know.
Okay.
But definitely one of the best.
Like, you distracted soccer practice, buddy. Mm-hmm. Like, okay.
One of the best romantic comedy film scenes of all time.
Yes, and so many of these movies, especially 80s rom-coms, mm-hmm. have this mm-hmm. grand gesture moment with the song mm-hmm. and whatever, but yep. this one is just, like, so different and so high school coded, mm-hmm. but elevated. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. So good.
God, I love it.
So Kat obviously falls for him again, and she goes to get him out of detention, and she does the big gross moment of flashing her coach. And I'm just like, this is so inappropriate on obviously so many levels. She's, you know, a senior in high school.
And before that, she's like grabbing his biceps, grabs his face to look at her, and she's like 6 inches away from him, and just full boobs. And everyone in detention sees it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oh, this, like, this obviously kind of takes away from, like, what her character arc is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I get it. The director had to, you know, writer had to do a scene to get him out of detention. But I'm like, he could have done anything else.
But, like, also, this was clearly directed by a man.
Oh, of course.
And it shows.
Of course.
It fucking
shows. The entire
shows.
Film shows that this was directed by a man. So, Patrick escapes out the window and...
Which is so crazy, like, he's just not gonna notice. And then also, what I love about this movie is that there's so many of these, like, high school scenes that are not realistic at all, but are thrown mm-hmm. in just to, like, set the scene. Mm-hmm. So, like, obviously you have with Miss Perky and the romance novel, mm-hmm. and then you have him confiscating the drugs and the cheese doodles.
Yeah, because he's like, I'm gonna need these later when
so
I have
to get the munchies
from smoking the weed.
Yes, and it's like, all this stuff obviously that went over my head, but it's like,
I know,
it's unnecessary, but it's perfect.
It's
you
so
know
good.
What I mean?
It's so good. It just makes it.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it,
it just all adds to, like, the comedy and, like, kind of, like, the dark comedy of it all, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, 100%. And then we have one of my other favorite scenes, which is kind of like, it's like a couple scenes in one, but they're just, like, paddling on, like, a river or a lake.
And like, we don't get the lead up to this. They escape from detention, and then it's
and
like, who suggests the paddle boat?
I know. And Patrick's like, well, how did you get me out? And she's like, I dazzled him with my wits. And I'm like, you mean your tits. You mean your tits.
You dazzled him with your tits.
You said wits. I think you misspoke.
That's incredible.
And I was like, again, I don't know if that was the whole, if that was like something I caught, that the writer was like, oh, let's put wits because it rhymes with tits. You know what I mean?
I don't know, but we're going with it because I love it.
I know.
I love it so much.
I know. But then we have another one of my favorite, I like screenshotted it because I wish we like could learn how to do sound bites. We should totally figure out how to
put, I think, like, actually, I think I can.
So there's that whole scene when so Patrick is like, what's your excuse? And Kat says, four. And Patrick says, acting the way we do. And Kat says, I don't like to do what people expect. Why should I live up to other people's expectations instead of my own? Patrick. So you disappoint them from the start, and then you're covered, right? Cat. Something like that. Patrick. Then you screwed up. Cat. How? You never disappointed me. Are you fucking kidding me?
Patrick.
This is like... Patrick. Romantic man shit. This is not... High school boys will never say this to you.
Oh,
don't,
no.
Don't... Any high schoolers listening, don't get your hopes up. This is
Patrick,
never going to happen to you.
My underpants would be off in this pedal boat. We would be banging in a pedal boat, okay?
Oh my god. And then they have like the iconic paintball scene and they have their first kiss.
Which I'm like, where is this paintball place? Because I want to go.
This
it's
was
so
another.
Fun. It's so romantic.
This was definitely one of those significant scenes for me too. Mm-hmm. Because I was a legitimate hopeless romantic mm-hmm. in high school. Like, me. Like, if you looked up hopeless romantic in a dictionary, my picture would show up. And I was like, I just wanted that so mm-hmm. bad. Like, that entire moment, I was like, this is literally, like, perfect.
And this whole movie, which we'll get into again at the end, but, like, is based on this trope script that's been done mm-hmm. a million times. But these specific things, like these romantic gestures, these romantic moments mm-hmm. feel so unique. Mm-hmm. Because of these settings mm-hmm. and because it's something so simple as like this little paintball date, but it allows them to like play off of each other. Yeah. They have this adorable moment for their first kiss. Then like afterwards they're covered in paint. It's just executed flawlessly.
Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of ruined because then Patrick like pushes prom and Kat like immediately gets guarded and they kind of, like, leave on, like, a sour note a little bit.
And then he just, like, whips a cigarette out. Like, where was he hiding it, number one? Number two, how did he get it out of the pack without her noticing? I'm like, I am a former smoker, okay? I know that you cannot keep this secret. You know what I mean? I was very preoccupied. I'm like, where did it come from?
Where's your
where
magic?
Did she, where was he hiding it?
How
did
she
see
this?
It?
Yeah. It was... It, like, sucked because they had such a great day.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and, like, and again, in this moment, I feel like you can't tell if he's pushing prom because he knows the money he'll get for it.
Mm-hmm.
Or if, like, he genuinely wants to go with her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, like, I think it's the latter. I think he really does want to just go to
yes.
prom with her. Like, he wants to experience these high school moments, mm-hmm. milestone, with her.
But then when she questions it, his guilty conscience mm-hmm. is like, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it also sucks because she's finally letting her wall
yeah.
down. And it kind of feels like she is self-sabotaging.
Because, yeah,
like, because even though he was kind of, like, weird about his answer, she could have just chosen to listen to him and believe him.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like she already knows. She already, with every single person, expects the worst.
Yeah.
So she was slightly giving him a chance, and then when he even stepped a toe out of line, mm-hmm. she's like, well, knew this wasn't going to work.
And she also is trying to be the opposite of, like, the societal norms.
Mm-hmm.
And so she knows that going to prom is, like, what would be expected of her, and she's trying to do the opposite of what is expected of her.
And it's
Which,
also...
in a way, I think that she would expect him to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he immediately kind of pushes back about prom and is trying to, like, coerce her into going,
mm-hmm.
it's very... It doesn't taste... Like, it doesn't sit well with her. Because she's mm-hmm. like, well, I thought... You know, she has to think in that moment, like, if this was real, that...
He would
That's
understand.
Something that you wouldn't be doing this, like, because you should get me. Like, why mm-hmm. all of a sudden are you mm-hmm. trying to make me do something that you know I don't want to do?
Mm-hmm. But then, like, Patrick aside, it exposes this kind of flawed narrative where she is just so dead set in her mm-hmm. way of being like, no, I'm not going to do what everyone thinks. And her best friend wants to go to prom. And she's like, no, of course we wouldn't do that. Like, it's so fucking stupid.
I know.
And when in reality, what she should actually do, because of how she thinks, is do whatever the fuck she wants. And if people
yeah.
want to judge her, they'll judge her, whatever. But mm-hmm. instead, she just has this image or this perception of who she should be
mm-hmm.
by, like, revolting against the system. And there's no flexibility in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like... In reality, her going to prom would be her, like, saying, fuck the system.
Oh, 100%.
But cannot see it like that because she's like, it's black and white. This is what everyone else is doing. This is what I need to do.
Mm-hmm. And then Bianca's pissed because she got asked to go to prom and she's a sophomore. So it is a bit, listen, it's a big deal.
And she's 16 years old.
And Kat's like, I'm not going to prom. And so like they kind of have like this, Bianca's just very upset. And then Kat eventually can kind of see like how much it's affecting Bianca. And so they finally have like this sisterly convo that I wish they had so much earlier in their relationship. And so she admits to Bianca, and because I think she also thinks that Bianca wants to go with Joey to prom, mm-hmm. like she's mm-hmm. not realizing it's Cameron, and she tells her how she dated Joey freshman year of high school, and they had sex because everyone else was doing it, so again, the pressure of trying to keep up with the societal norms of high school, and after she did it, I wouldn't say she regretted it, but she was like, I didn't like how I felt mm-hmm. doing that. Again, I was, you know, it's kind of like this proof of why she doesn't like to do things that are expected of her, which having sex should not be expected of you, number one. Let's get that straight. And so Joey gets pissed because he just wants to fuck. And so he dumps her because she wouldn't have sex with him anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, how to be a dick 101.
And like, the fact that this is one of the least problematic things in this movie,
yeah,
is what the fucking problem is. Because as she's saying it, as wrong and as horrible as it is so fucking believable.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is real. Like, this is how, and high school feels like mm-hmm. the end of the world. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels like if you don't do things right now, mm-hmm. the rest of your life is completely ruined. You have mm-hmm. no grasp of what the fuck is going on in the real mm-hmm. world. So it's like, oh my God, if people expect me to have sex and I don't, my mm-hmm. life is ruined. And yeah. no one will ever want to date me. No one will ever want to talk to me. And it's like, ugh.
No, I know it's so true because I was the wallflower in high school. I didn't have a boyfriend until I was in my early 20s. Like, I didn't kiss a boy until I was in my early 20s. So for me growing up in like my high school era and seeing all my friends having the experiences that, hello, the hopeless romantic wants to have. I want all these moments that I'm seeing in all these movies that I'm watching, all these books that I'm reading, and like I never had that. So like I completely, like what you're saying is so true, because then I'm thinking that there's something wrong with me and that mm-hmm. I'm unworthy, which is so far from the truth. But when
and
you're
then the whole rest of your life with dating is
exactly
doomed.
But like, you know, you just as a young girl, you see what society looks like. And what you should look like and what you should be doing and what you should be dating. And so it's just, it's so fucked that that's what kids have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And it's so much worse now in the era of social media, which mm-hmm. is like, which is what we've said plenty of times before, that social media is like a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
It's so mm-hmm. good and so informative and so helpful as like a resource for people, but it's also so bad. Because then you have the comparison and feeling like you're not, you know, good enough for people.
No, but it's so true because, like we said, high school is like this microcosm mm-hmm. and you think it's the whole world. Mm-hmm. So then when you have all of this stuff readily available to compare yourself to, body image, romance, relationships, TV, mm-hmm. all this stuff. And it's like, it is so amplified when you are that age. And you just feel like if you don't get it right mm-hmm. now at 15 years mm-hmm. old, the entire rest of your life is completely fucked. And literally. You also see it, obviously, with Bianca. That's like her whole MO. But you see how selfish she is. And not in like a horrible, oh, she's a narcissist, but in a way of like she is 15 or 16 and mm-hmm. she feels like everything is against her because she thinks that Kat isn't going to prom to spite her.
Yeah.
Like, you're ruining my life on purpose. When that is not what Kat is trying to do at all. Kat just wants Bianca to see from her point of view. Mm-hmm. And then even after Kat opens up and confesses this thing, which she really didn't want to tell her sister because she wanted her sister to learn it on her own. Bianca's such a little bitch. Which, mm-hmm. like, I would have been too. But 34-year-old me is like, girl, listen to your fucking sister. I know. But she's like, how could I not know about this? Like, well, I'm not going to make the same dumb mistakes that you did. And it's like, girl, you are, though. You are, though. It might not be with Cameron, but it will happen.
I know. But then it's like what you're saying, like, Kat realizes that she's been, like, overprotective of Bianca. Because I can relate to this, too, because, like, the big sister energy. You want to protect your younger siblings from either things that you've experienced yourself or what you've seen other people go through. And so she obviously doesn't want Bianca to get played by Joey or used. And there's also that, you know, there's also that little inkling of like, well, she's stepping up as the mom as well because the mom dipped out. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of like so many layers to this. And she realizes that she kind of does need to let Bianca, like, live her life. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, Kat just comes down the stairs. She's like, bye, Dad, going to prom. And he's just like, prom. What?
Which, what? Like, but also, in theory, this makes sense.
Yeah.
That you have to let your sister make her own decisions, mm-hmm. make her own mistakes, so mm-hmm. that she can make her own choices. But on the other hand, it's like, but why should she have to? If mm-hmm. I came before her and I have all this knowledge and I can yeah. stop her from being heartbroken or humiliated or feeling less than.
Exactly.
Of course Kat is going to want to prevent that. But Bianca is such a strong, even though she's very immature, she's a very strong girl. She has
like this strong disposition and you don't think of it that way in the beginning of the mm-hmm. movie. You definitely come across.
She's so like flighty.
Yeah, you feel like she's so kind of like Joey and that she's selfish and self-centered and can't appreciate her sister acting the way that she is and just being
whiny. And she can't appreciate people. I think it's, she can't appreciate Cameron who mm-hmm. really likes her because she's so used to people just liking her because of yeah. how beautiful she is or mm-hmm. because she's unattainable. Mm-hmm. So like, she doesn't like, know that his like motives are purer.
Exactly. And so I like by the end of the movie, her character arc, it shows what her potential could be if she just is strong and doesn't take shit from anybody, but does it in like a respectable way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Bianca goes with Cameron. Joey shows up to pick up Bianca.
Which, I'm sorry, Bianca's dress is so... Oh 90s prom dress, the two-piece.
The two-piece and the color.
With the tulle skirt. Mm-hmm. Love. I also hated Kat's dress and hair, but that's...
Yeah, it also, like, didn't seem like her.
It didn't suit her at all.
Yeah. Joey goes to pick up Bianca, and lo and behold, she's not there, and the dad just slams the door in his face. The dad
is having
like,
a rough night.
He's aging. Mm-hmm. Just, he's aging so much just in this one evening. We have this other big romantic gesture in where Patrick gets Kat's fave singer to play at prom, the lead singer of Letters to Cleo. And this dude is so in love with Kat. Like, just so in love. And even just to take away from, like, not even, like, the situation, just watching the prom scene and how hype it was. I'm like, where the fuck? I wish my high school prom was like this.
People These were are like, movie proms.
I know,
okay?
And I love them. Like,
I know.
I'm like, this is what it should be like. Like, this is what I actually wish would happen for, like, kids. Because it's such, like, a party. And you can just feel the joy and the excitement. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that the
My school
prom
didn't
scene.
Even have a prom. We had a dinner.
Yeah. Yeah. I like my junior prom better than my senior prom. My junior prom was at the high school, and we got to, like, pick the theme. And mm-hmm. it was, like, casino night or, like, Vegas Ooh. Night. Yeah, and, like, it was really cool. The whole,
That's
like,
a classic.
The whole, like, gymnasium was decked out. And, you know, it was just really on theme and on point. And, like, my senior prom was boring. It was at, like, the Wildwood Community Center. Mm-hmm. And I just remember, like, no one dancing. And then also I was, like, depressed because I didn't have a prom date.
Oh.
But then I, like, made friends. Right before prom, I became really good friends with this girl. And, like, she didn't have a date either. So we kind of, like, all right, like, we're just going to go, like, went mm-hmm. together.
I love that.
Yeah. Then we have the you know, the third part, what we would call like the third act breakup in our novels.
Mm-hmm.
Joey confronts Patrick, brings up paying him to get Kat to date him so that he could date Bianca. Joey then, so then Kat hears this and is like, what the actual fuck? She flees the dance floor.
And she immediately believes it, obviously.
I know. And Patrick chases after her. Cameron now approaches this Joey.
It's my favorite part
I know.
Of the whole movie.
I know. Joey punches Cameron, the poor kid. Like, I can't even. And then all of a sudden, Bianca comes up behind and she, like, punches him twice and then knees him in the balls. And he's like, this is for hurting my sister, this is for punching my boyfriend, and this is for me. Talk about a queen moment.
Mm-hmm. And we love a sensitive man that mm-hmm. she then picks Cameron up and she's like, uh-huh. are you okay? And he's not like embarrassed. He's like, no. Damn.
He's like, I'm even thank more in you. Love now.
Yeah. He's like, that was amazing. Also, he couldn't do it. Like, and when she punches him, he's like, damn it, Bianca, I'm shooting a nose brand tomorrow.
I know. Oh my God. Oh my God. And so, like, and then, you know, you have, like, this crazy big scene, and there's so much, like, pent-up, like, anger and, like, aggression in, like, this moment, and then it just, like, mellows out and, like, gets, like, depressive. And, you know, you just have, like, Kat sitting on her balcony, like, drawing, and Bianca's like, do you want to go sailing? And she's like, no.
Literally the day after prom.
I know.
Like, sleep in, guys.
I know. But then, like, you have this really, really great moment between Daddy Stratford and Kat, where he is lets her know that he already paid for Sarah Lawrence and that he understands, like, how sheltered he's been or how much he has sheltered them. And he recognizes, like, what a wonderful girl she is and, like, mm-hmm. the woman that she has the potential to become. And he doesn't want to do anything to thwart that. So he's, like, finally, like, relinquishing control. And he expresses how hard it is mm-hmm. for a dad to do that. Of their daughter, like, he's, like, trying to say, like, you don't understand how hard it is for me to just, like, let you go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just very protective of his daughters, which...
And he's, like, it's not because I don't want you to experience things, it's because mm-hmm. I'm scared.
He's, like, I know what's out there. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to get hurt.
And I love this because we get so many interactions between them throughout the movie, and mm-hmm. it seems like, oh, these are just scenes for Kat to be able to use her one-liners or her yeah. little quips. But then when it comes to the end and they have this like beautiful moment and it's not just, okay, this is like the side story. It's literally, it filters into this whole persona of Kat mm-hmm. where it's like, she is finally finding someone who is celebrating her independence
yeah.
and who is acknowledging that it's a good thing that she's independent and that he's actually proud of her. And he's so... like, impressed with who she's become despite mm-hmm. all of the bullshit that she's been through. And so even though it seems like a completely unrelated storyline, it totally tracks with, like, her, not her journey, but everyone else's journey to understanding Kat.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we have the best movie speech of all time. And, like, insert soundbite here. Like, literally, I screenshot it, but, like, I didn't want to read it because it's just, like, the way that she... This acting moment from Julia Stiles was so beautiful and emotional, and just, like, the anguish on her face, and, you know, she has this speech about saying how much, like, she hates him mm-hmm. and what he did to her, but realistically, she doesn't hate him at all. Like, she just, mm-hmm. she loves him, and she's really pissed that he hurt her like that.
And... she's an ugly crier, so you know that this mm-hmm. was genuine emotion, mm-hmm. not yeah. acting.
No, like, it was probably, obviously, one of, like, the best movie scenes of all time.
Oh, yeah.
And she goes out to her car, and there's a Fender Strat just, like, chilling in her front seat, and...
Which, I'm sorry, with the windows open and everything, like, theft, are we serious? But, okay.
And Patrick says, yeah, he was like... I made a mistake. Like, I let this guy pay me to go out with some girl. And he's like, she's like, oh, what happened? He's like, well, I fell for her. And he's like, yeah, I used that money to buy you this guitar. So, you know. But I think the one thing I didn't like about this specific part of the movie is she's so quick to forgive him. And I feel like, again, we didn't really have enough of, like, a build-up scene to, like, to get that. Like, she just gives the speech, and then she goes out to her car, and then she's, like, making out with him. Which, like, girl, I don't blame you. I would make out with him, too. But she's very much like, you know, you did a fucked up thing, and I would expect her to be a little bit more, you need to beg for it. And she kind of just, like,
literally took the words out of my mouth. I completely agree. That was my biggest issue, especially, like, rewatching this under a critical lens, because I know we're going to talk about it. It's like, from what we know of her as a person, she would never let him off the hook this easy. I don't care how much growth they're trying to portray that she's had, she still would hold his feet to the fucking fire, because he messed up.
Exactly.
Like, he didn't have to grovel. He was just like, I bought you a guitar. And she's like, well, you can't just buy me a new guitar every time. And it's like, you said that after you were already kissing him.
I know. I know. But then he was like, but there's drums and the bass.
And a tambourine.
It's like, all right. All right, yeah, you're charming.
So it's like, if we had just even one in-between scene of him trying.
Yeah.
Because look at how hard he had to freaking work after all he did was, like, not kiss her because she was drunk. And then all of a sudden she finds out something so much more horrible.
Yeah. I know. I guess maybe, like, because he had all these big romantic gestures in between that were definitely more than just being paid to, like, take her out. Like, you know.
And I think she also, you know, we're kind of supposed to be under the impression that she's had all of this character growth of, like, softening.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, she hugs her dad and he looks like a goddamn meteor fell out of the sky.
I know.
And so it's like, we're supposed to feel like, oh, Kat is this soft person who's just so forgiving now. And it doesn't line up with her character at all.
No.
I mean, obviously we want them to be together. But
yeah,
we want them to
I'm
work for it.
I'm fine that they end up together. Like, this, they're obviously meant to be. But I was just kind of like, oh, wow. Like, I didn't remember that she, like, forgave him that quickly. And obviously watching it now through the lens is, now, like we said, like, watching her character growth and, like, seeing who she is, it's not necessarily believable if this were, like, real life. So. But then we have one of... So, one of my favorite things about TV shows and movies is the music. Like, and I love a big cinematic music event. And it just ends with I Want You to Want Me, the, you know, covered by Letters to Cleo.
On the rooftop?
They're just on the rooftop. And I'm like, you know, music makes a film and it makes a TV show. And it's just like, this was such a cool moment.
And
it was such a great way to end the film.
Yes. And in the 90s and 2000s, it was so different in that it would just be a great soundtrack. Whereas now there are actual, oh, what are they called? People who do music for movies.
Scores?
Yes. So there's actual scores designed specifically for movies. There's music written for movies. Have you listened to Dangerous by Hailee Steinfeld from Sinners? Holy shit. Amazing song.
No, not yet.
But it's a standalone song that's obviously written because of this movie.
Well,
and
there's,
it's like,
yeah, there's so many now that do that.
And it's like, that's not how it was before. Before, it literally was about selecting the perfect song,
like, that was
to go with the vibe.
I loved 80s movies. Like, Don't You Forget About Me by Simple Minds. I will never not think of The Breakfast Club because it's such an important cinematic moment. And so when you hear certain songs, you think of, like, you automatically relate it to things that you've seen or experienced.
And you can't do that with an original score.
No.
And like, I'm not knocking an original score because it's perfectly tailored to the movie. And like you said, it does make a movie or break it. But it's just a different, it was just a different vibe.
Yeah. Now, did you watch the bloopers?
Yes, I did. I did.
This cast loved each other so much.
Ugh.
Like, the camaraderie, you could see it in the bloopers that play throughout the credits. I'm like, oh my god, they must have had a blast filming this movie.
And I think it's because they were all so young. None of them had super breakout roles yet. Like, this was most of their, because even Julia Stiles, like, this was her first big role. This was before Save the Last Dance, before, you know, these other movies. And they were just, like, high school kids mm-hmm. being in a high school movie.
Yeah. And so, like, I hope the set wasn't nefarious in any way, because it seemed like they had, like, it seemed like it was a really great environment for them to film in. So, I loved it. I just love seeing their, I like seeing the actors' chemistry outside of, like, the film. And they definitely had it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the scene when they're in the car, and then he, like, reaches over and, like, grabs her to kiss her, and she just, like, shoves him away. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, that's great.
And just, like, I mean, we mentioned a little bit, but, like, just the fact that the acting in this, like, very cheesy mm-hmm. rom-com is actually so good and uh-huh. so on point. And then the fact that these actors were not pigeonholed by
no.
these characters. Like,
no.
every other role that we saw them in was so vastly different.
Mm-hmm. Like, my favorite Joseph Gordon-Levitt film is, like, Inception. Like, I loved him in Inception. Yeah.
Oh, I do not remember that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think my favorite Julia Stiles is probably Save the Last Dance.
Me too.
But I will say, her hair in this movie,
amazing. I'm so jealous of it.
Incredible.
It's like,
when she's wearing it down, so it's just cascading long. Down her back.
I'm like, that's the hair I always wanted.
And then she's got, like, half up, half down. I'm like, mm-hmm. and then the ponytail with, obviously, mm-hmm. the slut pieces. I'm sure they're not called that. You know what I mean? I was like, it's beautiful. I love it.
So, yeah, that's 10 Things I Hate About You, based on The Taming of the Shrew by William Shakespeare. Did it Wait. Match the film? No. Or the book?
Thank
no.
God. Wait. Are you rating the movies?
Yes.
Okay. I do have one thing to say before we get to our ratings about Kat as a character, because I have thoughts about this whole feminism mm-hmm. angle that they're trying to portray. Because... Mm-hmm. Like we said, amazing that this is the first, like, really notable main character yeah. that is so focused on mm-hmm. feminism. Love that. But the way that it's portrayed, obviously written by a man, obviously written in the 90s, because we are meant, as the viewer, to feel like her feminism is her flaw.
Mm-hmm.
And we're meant to feel like this is the reason that no one likes her. This mm-hmm. is the reason that no one understands her. This is the reason why she has a bad relationship with her sister and her father mm-hmm. and everyone. And then by the end of the movie, we're supposed to feel like, oh, wow, as a feminist, she could never have a relationship. And now yeah. that she's kind of, you know, let a man in, mm-hmm. she's not a feminist anymore. She's yeah. a lover girly. And it's like, it just is so single faceted. Mm-hmm. And I love that she is portrayed as a strong woman who mm-hmm. does not back down for no. majority of the movie. Mm-mm. With her sister, she doesn't back down. With her dad, she doesn't. And I love that. But then the way that, like, we as a viewer are supposed to hate her because of that.
Yeah.
Is so gross. And it's so... this, like, caricature of feminism, mm-hmm. of just, like, women who hate men and don't well, shave their armpits
and it's also,
listen to feminist rock.
It's written by a male. Well, I don't know. Actually, I don't know if it's written by a male, but it's, like, directed by a male. Mm-hmm. And, you know, feminism and women in that position shouldn't be portrayed by a man, because they don't actually know. Mm-hmm. Nor do they understand.
Mm-hmm. So, and while it may have been progressive for 1999...
Oh, I agree, 100%.
Yes, and then looking back at it now, it's like, I can respect that and I can appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
But what is it doing to rewatch this yeah. now? And mm-hmm. saying that,
yeah.
you know, these are these classic movies that we love so mm-hmm. much... And it's like, every time I recommend one of these movies, I want to be like, listen, I know it's fucked.
Well, that's but... the thing. That's the thing. I'm like, you know, we didn't notice these things as young viewers when it mm-hmm. first came out. So rewatching it now, because even like when we watched Bring It On, when we introduced our friend Christina, Bring It On, we saw how problematic it was,
Ugh.
But we still loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still a classic. I'm still always going to watch it. And it's just
kind
of... And
even this one, like... They use the R word. There's mm-hmm. very little diversity. And
oh,
the
yeah.
only black character, Chastity, ends up being a real fucking bitch and, like, betraying her friend.
Yeah.
So it is, it has so many issues.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I feel like it's obviously okay to look at it in a critical lens and still love it for what it was worth, love it for what it was in its cultural time period.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think this is one of the better films in that time period.
Mm-hmm.
One that did a better job of, like, portraying certain things.
I agree.
You know, because, like, I love, love, She's All That and The Princess Diaries, but it's such a nerd-shaming, beauty-shaming films.
100%.
And they make, you know, I was actually listening to a podcast today, and they brought up The Princess Diaries, which I was like, oh, we can cover that, because that's based on a book. And they say, like, she's like, I actually have a problem with that movie because it makes nerdy girls feel like they aren't beautiful. And I'm like, holy shit. I didn't even, like, I never even thought about that. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like, you're so right. Like, you know, I remember watching that and, like, seeing how beautiful Anne Hathaway was and, like, wishing that that would, like, that would happen to me. So,
but
again,
you have
it does.
Blow up.
Exactly. And it's like, but that's not, that it isn't fair because you're beautiful no matter what. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, wow. Like, that's so
and
true.
And that's why I love the parodies of all these teen movies, like Not Another Teen Movie and things like that, where they're calling out this obvious bullshit, like in She's All That. Oh my god, she took her glasses off and now she's like this gorgeous bombshell. Like, or Cinderella Story, where she's got the teensiest mask.
Listen,
and you can't recognize her.
There's so many societal problematic norms in these movies, and we are well aware, but I still love this
Heather,
one.
We can't enjoy anything anymore.
No,
everything
is so hard. I think that's the whole point. I don't think there's one thing I've ever watched in general that you don't have a problem with. Like, you're just, you're gonna, someone is going to have a problem with something. That's just the facts of life.
We're seeing it on Love Island. We'll talk about that on Bookish Banter. Anyway, all right.
Yeah, let's rate it. I was actually thinking about that. I was like, should we rate these movies?
Yeah, I wasn't
sure. I guess we should. But, like, how would we, would it be out of five? Like, what is, how does movies work?
Should we do out of 10? That's kind of crazy.
Like, you know, you think about, like, Rotten Tomatoes, they go up to, like, 100%.
Yeah. Maybe we should do, like, out of 10. Because they'll love to see if girls do their stuff out of 10. Like, their rating systems.
They do. All right. Let's see. What should we, out of 10 beer-flavored nipples? Let's go with that one. I like that one.
Love it.
I'll give it a 9.5.
Ooh, 9.5.
I love it. Like, I'm not... Like, listen, this movie... So many pivotal moments, like, I recall... Like, I can pinpoint where I was, like, when I, like... Or, like, how I felt as a youth watching this. So, it was just... It was... This is probably my favorite movie of the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you asked me what my favorite movie in the 90s was, it's probably this or, like, Fern Gully. Like, you know.
Fern Gully?
You don't know what Fern Gully is? Was it? Oh my god. It's animated. Robin Williams. Oh my god. You need to watch Fern Gully. You can't tell
me. Oh, I've seen this. I mean, I haven't seen it probably since it came out.
I was obsessed with Fern Gully.
Yes, I've seen this. Okay. This came out in 1993. That's probably when I saw it, to be honest. Wow. Whew. That's in the past. Okay. Oh, man, this is so hard, because I'm like, I don't want to go too high, because we have so many more movies to talk about. But out of 10 gives me a lot more leeway. I'm going 8.5.
Okay.
Because I thought it was too short.
I know. I texted you, and I was like, this movie was so much shorter than I remember.
And when you said that, I was like, oh my god, same, because the prom scene happened,
and then
I paused it, and it said, like, 10 minutes left, and I was like...
Yeah, the prom scene should have been...
They're not even speaking.
Yeah, the prom scene missed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot that could have been done with that.
Yeah, so I feel like we're definitely missing an in-between scene where Patrick has to grovel more.
Yeah.
And just because of, like, not the problematic-ness, because I know that all these movies are going to have that, but just the way that Kat is portrayed as a fellow... Listen, I just see a lot of myself in Kat.
Okay? Oh, no, 100%. 100%.
And I'm like, I know that people don't like me because of who I am, but...
Like, your cat persona, or you're like, your persona is Kat Stratford.
Well, imagine if I was like this in high school. God, I would have been insufferable.
Yeah.
It's taken me 30 years to be this way. Anyway, my point is, absolutely love this movie. I think the casting, flawless. The music, flawless. The setting, all of it. The scenes, specifically, like we talked about, the... Like, those pivotal scenes, like the breakup and the grand gesture and all this stuff, I feel like are very unique in a very common setting. Yeah. But, yeah, I just feel like there could have been more. And yeah, I would have 100%. Loved it if there was 100%. More.
I just love Heath Ledger. And I'm, like, actually really sad that he lost his life so soon. Because I think that he would have been one of the greats.
Mm-hmm.
Especially after seeing his performance in The Dark Knight and like seeing what he was capable of as an actor.
And his range, just in general, the different movies that he was in. Just, I mean, he was an incredible actor in general.
Mm-hmm.
Born in 1979. Wow.
So he's 10 years older than me. So he would have been 46 this year.
And his daughter is 19. That's kind of crazy.
That's wild.
With Michelle Williams. I forgot. Mm-hmm. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And they were in Brokeback Mountain together. Oh, that might be my favorite Heath Ledger movie, Brokeback.
I actually haven't seen that in its entirety. Oh. I've only seen, like, bits and pieces of it.
That is... I actually, like, can't watch it because it makes me sad, and I don't like movies that make me sad, but it's so fucking good.
I know. I also love Jake Gyllenhaal.
I don't love him in everything, but I loved him in that. Yeah, okay. Oh my gosh, what a great start to our book to movie adaptation series.
And also, to be transparent, we might not have always... just because we're watching the movie doesn't mean we read the book.
Right, all right.
And we were definitely very frank in that, because I'm like, there's so many movies that I want to talk about that I didn't fucking read the book, and I'm not gonna... I don't have time to also read the book.
Listen, we still have our other 3 episodes a month on top of this, and you still have a child. I'm going back to school next semester.
We're just trying to make it, and this is what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple, like, there are book podcasts that do specific, like, page to film. And tag them in the post, like, when we post to social media, because I follow a couple of girls on, like, Instagram that do that specifically, that read the books and then watch the movie.
Which I do love.
And that's, like, their whole basis of their podcast, so I think that's
And there
that's
are definitely
great.
Some that I have read the book that we will talk about exactly. the movie, but not all of them. And also, I feel like a lot of them that I've seen the movie and haven't read the book, and it's like, I don't want to read the book. I mean, maybe I will eventually, but, like, I after, agree. It's not going to be the same.
I know. Because, like, I loved Something Borrowed, and I didn't realize that it was, like, an Emily Giffen book.
Mm-hmm.
And I, like, tried to read it, and I couldn't get into it because I just loved the movie so much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
It's like all the people who watched Lord of the Rings and were like, I'm going to read Lord of the Rings. And you're like, you're not. You're not, though.
No. You're not. Because, no.
So please let us know in the comments or message us if you like this series, if you have any specific ones you want us to cover, or any, like,
there's so many
guidelines. Yeah, it's like,
how many horror films are based off books? You have Carrie, like, all the Stephen Kings, obviously. Mm-hmm. Oh, The Shining. Oh, I'm definitely gonna do The Shining. Never read the book, but love that fucking movie.
And I won't do it because you don't like clowns.
No, I will watch the original with Tim Curry.
Mm-hmm.
Is that his name? Because I love him so much. That and I have watched it. But the new one with Bill Skarsgård is actually fucking terrifying.
It's fucking scary.
Fucking terrifying. I only watched the first one.
I'm not scared of clowns, but there are so many jump scares in that movie. Yeah, girl.
No. And actually, around Halloween, in my development, someone always puts a balloon on one of the sewer.
Okay, that's amazing.
We could do October. We should do a horror movie.
That's 100%.
We could do, like, The Shining or whatever. I don't know. Oh my God.
As immediately when we get off of this and we start making a list, we're going to have enough content for the next 5 years, Heather.
It will fall on my month because I'm even months. Anyways. Okay. All right.
Technically, I could do a horror Thanksgiving movie.
Yeah, you could. Who cares? You could also do, like, no, you can't do Krampus, because that's also my month. I don't even know if Krampus is based off a book.
I just know it is. I think it's like a fairy tale?
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I think so.
You're right.
Oh, and a lot of those are based, like, on the Grimm fairy tales.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have content too much. For days.
There's too much. Anyways, is there anything else?
No.
All right.
No. This is longer than the movie.
Just about, to be quite honest. And it went by so fast.
Uh-huh.
Like, it flew. Like, I was like, oh, it's an hour. I was like, it's an hour and 37. I'm like, okay, I'm like, that's kind of a long time. And then it was over, and I was like, no, it was so short.
Like, it's not enough. And also, so I watched it. My mom is here visiting, and I watched it with her. She'd never seen it before. And afterwards, I'm like, what did you think? And she's like, it was kind of stupid. And I was like,
how dare.
And then her biggest criticism was, why is it called 10 Things I Hate About You? It doesn't make any sense. I was like, Mom, the poem. The mm-hmm. poem. And she's mm-hmm. like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Like, they only said it once. I'm like, should I go through other movie titles right now? Do you want to talk about how it never makes sense?
Yeah, they don't. All right.
You had to be there, I guess.
Truly. You had to be a youth. You had to watch this in your young adolescence to truly 100%. Appreciate the impact that this mm-hmm. film had.
Love it.
That's all we have for you today. If you like what you heard, please make sure to follow, subscribe, and rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you use. If you have any book/movie recommendations or questions for us, you can email us at fullybookedcafpod@gmail.com. Also, be sure to follow us on TikTok and Instagram at fullybookedcafpod to see our upcoming reads. Thanks for checking us out, and remember,
if you need us, we're fully booked.
Bye! Bye.